The title of this audiobook is The Secret New Constitution for America. It was recorded on July 23, 1975. The author is political economist, author, and lecturer, Dr. Peter Beter, the man who predicted and coined the word stagflation, and who is famous as the man who opened Fort Knox in September 1974. Dr. Beter was a lawyer in private practice in Washington, D.C., from 1951 to 1961, when he was appointed counsel to the United States Export-Import Bank by President Kennedy. After leaving the Ex-Im Bank in 1967, Dr. Beter became an international legal and financial consultant and a chief developer of international business in the Republic of Zaire. Further biographical information is presented in Who's Who in the East, the Blue Book of London, and other biographical reference works. Dr. Beter is also chairman of the American Patriots Committee, where he can be reached at 1629 K Street, the letter K Street, Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20006. Part 1, Subtle Warnings from President Ford.
On June 17, 1975, President Ford made some remarks that seemed to refer directly to the plans of the Rockefeller dynasty to take over America. Most of his speech consisted of crowd-pleasing rhetoric, and this is what you heard quoted in the controlled media. But woven cleverly through his speech was a sequence of remarks which paint a very different picture. Presidential speeches are not written casually, with meaningless remarks thrown in here and there. Whatever is said is for a purpose, whether it be to convey a public relations effect or to inject subconscious ideas that might be rejected if they were strongly emphasized, or simply to have these things technically on record so that they can be referred to later as proving that no surprise was ever intended. Keep in mind that President Franklin D. Roosevelt used to say, and I quote, "Nothing ever happens in politics by accident," unquote. Therefore, consider carefully the following excerpts from his speech of June 17, 1975. And I quote again, "In the months ahead, we face a very critical choice," unquote, "the preservation of free enterprise or a headlong plunge into governmental regulation." Now, the words "critical choice" harken back to Nelson Rockefeller's Commission on Critical Choices for Americans, on which President Ford served even after he became president. Nelson Rockefeller got the name for his commission from a book published in 1930 with Rockefeller financing. Its title was The American Rich, and it was written by Hoffman Nickerson, an associate of Nelson Rockefeller. This book argued as its central theme that we would one day be forced to make a critical choice for Americans, namely, replacement of our free republic with an hereditary dictatorship. Was President Ford cleverly telling us that this is what lies ahead within a matter of months, despite all the pleasant words about an economic upturn just ahead? Another quote, "From my travels, Americans have not arrived at a consensus for collectivism," unquote. And also, quote, "We have not held a referendum," unquote, "to repudiate our present system." But, my friends, the consensus for collectivism he mentioned is exactly what the planned economic calamity ahead is intended to bring about in America, as I have explained in my previous audio books. And why in the world would he refer to a referendum, which is not a normal procedure at all in America? For the apparent answer, look at Britain, which is further down the same road that we are now traveling. The national referendum made its debut in Britain in June 1975, just a few days before the President spoke. And the national referendum, my friends, has been widely identified as a symptom of the breakdown of representative democracy. In other words, it is a red flag that says, quote, "the system is failing," unquote. Worse yet, as I detailed in my audio book on the Fort Knox gold scandal, a referendum is the very device by which Nelson Rockefeller hopes to bring his secret new constitution into effect and make himself our dictator. In his speech, President Ford merely said, "We have not done these things." But his implication appeared to be that we have not yet done these things, things which should be unthinkable. President Ford also added that his administration is now seeking a new balance between the public and private sectors. But what new balance? A mixed economy with increasing government ownership and control of enterprise? He really didn't say. President Ford went on to say that he objects to those who, quote, "those who criticize free enterprise and propose nothing in its stead," unquote. Apparently, it is okay to heap abuse on the free enterprise system that made our country great if you do propose anything in its stead. And the secret new constitution written for the Rockefeller dynasty does propose something instead of free enterprise, the virtual elimination of government regulation of the biggest monopolies and cartels, but total regulation and control over everything else. It would create a centrally planned national economy, which is exactly what exists today in such utopias as Soviet Russia, Red China, and Cuba, to mention a few shining examples. Thus, my friends, the signs continue to indicate, both publicly and through my confidential channels, that the secret new constitution of the Rockefellers is still on its way. As I say these words, however, I do so against a background of events in the past several weeks which, for the first time, reveal that the four Rockefeller brothers are beginning to lose their grip on events. Nelson Rockefeller has destroyed his fair-haired boy image in the United States Senate by his own arrogant, autocratic actions as presiding officer. Furthermore, the Worldwide Gold Corner by David Rockefeller has been thrown off schedule recently. The United States Treasury failed in June 1975 to persuade the International Monetary Fund to sell its gold, because France now knows that the alleged huge gold reserve of the United States no longer exists. These and other missteps lately have prevented Nelson Rockefeller from seizing the presidency as he had planned in June 1975 last month. And time is beginning to work against the Rockefellers in their takeover plan, to the extent that tentative opposition is developing where it has been absent before. The Rockefeller plans, however, have now progressed so far, and the momentum is so great, that they have already guaranteed the suffering of great economic hardship soon by many Americans. But if the American people continue to be aroused from their slumber, as has just begun in recent weeks, our beloved nation can still be rescued from the dictatorial clutches of the Rockefeller dynasty in time. The key factor, my friends, is for you to understand what they are driving toward, and to exercise your constitutional rights of freedom of speech to spread the word while you can.
Part 2. The Source of the Secret New Constitution.
In 1964, the writing of a new Constitution for America began at a tax-exempt foundation with the misleading name Center for the Study of Democratic Institutions, one of the many major foundations which are controlled and funded by the Rockefeller dynasty for their own purposes. At about the same time, by interesting coincidence, a drive began in Congress to call a constitutional convention, which I will mention again later. The people who took it upon themselves to write this new constitution on our behalf were, of course, not elected representatives or in any other way our representatives. As a tax-exempt foundation, they were able to do their work on what amounts to a subsidy taken from your taxes. But you and I were never asked if we wanted a new constitution written. Indeed, only a very tiny fraction of the people in the United States even know that it exists. It has been made known to practically no one except a select category of influential people whose views and interests generally coincide with those of the people who wrote it. The American people, as a whole, are still in the dark about it, and this situation is deliberate. It is therefore truly a secret constitution. But you may ask, if so few people even really know about it, is it really significant? Does it really matter? Or was it really just a harmless academic exercise? To begin with, if it was a frivolous exercise, there is no good reason why you and I should have had to subsidize it by paying taxes on behalf of the tax-free foundation, which we do. And if it was not a frivolous exercise, but a serious effort, then it is nothing less than a clear-cut effort to help undermine and radically change our entire political system, in flagrant violation of the legal restrictions under which tax-exempt organizations are supposed to operate. Now consider the following facts. The secret new Constitution took 10 years to write, drawing upon the efforts of more than 100 people. A preliminary version was published in 1970 and given exposure primarily in the limited circles I have already mentioned. But last year, in 1974, an essentially final version was quietly published in a book entitled The Emerging Constitution by Rexford G. Tugwell, the man who directed the formulation of the new Constitution from start to finish. It was published by a major publisher, Harper & Row, but only in a token fashion. I was only able to obtain the book by knowing all about it and going straight to the publisher's warehouse. Personnel there informed me that the book had been printed only in a very small quantity, that it was sent out to bookstores only for a few short weeks, and that all unsold copies were then pulled in and stored in the warehouse. The purpose, my friends, is obvious. The conspirators wanted to be technically on record with publication of the Constitution. They can then say, in the event of exposure, that this is no secret. After all, we published it. The Rockefellers always play the odds, my friends. So long as only a very small minority are aware of what they are up to at any time, they know they will not be stopped. Only if awareness of this scheming becomes widespread are they in danger of being stopped. The version of their new Constitution, which was published in 1974, on pages 595 through 621 of the Tugwell book, is the 40th draft. During most of the time that the Constitution was being written, the Center for Study of Democratic Institutions was lavishly funded by the Rockefeller interests to the tune of $2.5 million annually. But now that the Center has produced what its secret supporters really wanted from among its several projects, the secret Constitution funding has rapidly shriveled to little more than a tenth of that amount, and the sinner is apparently on its way into oblivion. Perhaps you will still protest at this point if you know the identities of the participants and say, "But these are prestigious people. Why, even the Encyclopedia Britannica was completely rewritten in 1968 under the supervision of the top people at the center." Regardless of anything else, surely such highly respected people would produce a constitutional model with great merit. Then I say first, to judge the product for yourself, based not only on the summary I am about to give, but on your own reading of the document itself. And on top of that, they conclusively prove that their own total incompetence in constitutional writing in 1969. That year, the personnel of the center, the same ones who were writing the secret new constitution for our nation, decided to write a little constitution for their own use, to govern their own activities within the center. After months of acrimonious debate, they failed completely, and the center was then reorganized in a completely autocratic fashion. Having thus shown that they could not even figure out how to govern themselves in their own small think tank, they then proceeded for 5 more years in writing their prescription to govern us, over 200 million people. The man chosen in 1964 to direct the writing of the secret new constitution was Rexford G. Tugwell, a prominent member and architect of Franklin D. Roosevelt's New Deal administration, and an advocate of the planned economy for over 40 years. When he was chosen to guide the writing of the new constitution, there was never any question about the basic character of the document that would result. As far back as 1932, he stated that it would be a logical impossibility to have a planned economy within our present constitutional and statutory structure. Modifications so serious as to mean destruction and rebeginning are required. These are the words of Rexford G. Tugwell. You may have noticed that we have heard a lot these days about the alleged need for national economic planning. But you may not have realized until now exactly what economic planning really means. In 1932, in the depths of the Great Depression, the concept of economic planning was discussed in great detail by Rexford Tugwell. In his words, "Planning is a process of predicting and making it come true." And he pointed out that unaccustomed limitations on our activity cannot be escaped if our economy is to be centrally planned. In fact, he concluded that these limitations must be so great that, to quote him, "business will logically be required to disappear." This is not an overstatement for the sake of emphasis. It is literally meant, unquote. We also hear a lot today about the problem of so-called excess profits. And the very word profit is a dirty word to some people these days. And in 1932, Mr. Tugwell made it clear that it is in his view, all profits must be completely eliminated as a part of economic planning. The supply of any commodity, including those on which you depend to live, would thus become strictly a matter of governmental allocation and dictation. Without profits, you see, no individual has any economic means with which to enforce and follow through on any independent decision. In such a society, your dependence on the government would be total and absolute. If our economy were structured that way today, you would not be hearing this message, because it would not be in our rulers' interest for you to do so. There would be no such thing as an audio book talking to you about the Fort Knox gold scandal or warning you of the planned stock market crash in the very near future, because Audiobooks Incorporated could not exist. Thus, even such things as freedom of speech are tied directly to the freedom of our economic structure. Under economic planning, the government would not only control supply, but would finagle demand to match through devices such as rationing, price controls, quotas, and what have you. But would all this nevertheless produce a kind of utopia for those willing to have their lives run by an all-powerful government? Of course not. Even Tugwell admitted, and I quote, "We shall all of us be made unhappy in one way or another, for things we love as well as things that are only privileges will have to go," unquote. Then what is his objective? Their answer is a godless kind of drab security, of a sort which only looks attractive to people who are caught in a severe depression, such as existed when Tugwell made his remarks in 1932. Such a thing simply is not attractive to you and me in normal times. But should we have another severe depression, it might be attractive once again to a lot of desperate people. And, my friends, this is why the crushing depression that lies just ahead has been planned and rigged by the four Rockefeller brothers and their collaborators. They plan to squeeze us unmercifully through unprecedented economic hardship, unrest, and turmoil. And then, when the time is ripe, the schemes presented in the secret new Constitution will be offered as the solution to all of our problems. There are at least three different avenues which the Rockefellers have available for introduction of their new secret Constitution. Their primary plan, as described in my audiobook on the Fort Knox gold scandal, is by means of a national referendum in the general election of 1976. Nelson Rockefeller plans to be president by then and to rig his own re-election as president at the same time. A backup plan is by means of a constitutional convention. The authority for the Congress to call such a convention already exists, based on petitions which have been extracted from nearly all the states. The excuse for this convention would have to do with apportionment, the so-called one-man, one-vote ruling of the Supreme Court. But there would be no way to prevent such a convention, once called, from becoming a runaway and completely rewriting the Constitution. The final fallback plan is the piecemeal introduction of the provisions of the new Constitution through amendments and many other means. This process is very much at work already, as I think you'll be able to see from the discussion of the contents of the secret new Constitution. The piecemeal developments going on today are intended to prepare us to accept the new Constitution by making many of its provisions seem familiar to us. But should their plans to unveil the secret new Constitution overtly fail for any reason, they remain prepared to continue the piecemeal approach toward the same final result. But there is today a continuing drumbeat of Rockefeller-sponsored propaganda to make us believe our Constitution is obsolete and should be replaced. Even state constitutions are under the same attack on all sides, always with the same theme, that they are obsolete, outmoded, unable to cope with the problems of today. The attack on state constitutions all over America in recent years has been coordinated by a complex of agencies headquartered in Chicago, Illinois, which are dominated and financed directly and indirectly by the Rockefellers. Their most important target is not the state constitutions, though. It is your mind. If you can be made to accept the idea that your state constitution is obsolete, outmoded, and need to be rewritten or replaced, your resistance to the same arguments about our republic's constitution will be greatly reduced. So you see, my friends, the Rockefeller dynasty hopes to celebrate our nation's bicentennial by replacing the freedoms guaranteed in our present constitution with their own dictatorship, a cleverly disguised dictatorship. It has been made to superficially resemble the government that we now have, so that we will not recognize it for what it is until too late. They are using every propaganda trick at their command to make us lower our guard. And they are about to put us all in a condition of economic desperation to persuade us to accept their cleverly disguised dictatorship.